The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 27 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1981 season. Could the Kingdom emulate the great side of 1929 to 1932 in becoming four in a row winners? During the course of the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
From the moment Kerry retained the Sam Maguire in 1980, all talk focused on the potential for four in a row and whether this Kingdom outfit could emulate their peers of 1929 to 32. As the 1981 All-Ireland Championship season drew ever closer, the talk intensified. In some quarters, people were already speaking of the five in a row. There was also talk of whether this side's best days were behind them and if recent foes such as Roscommon or Offaly were ready to take over. John O'Keefe was the veteran of the Kerry side at this stage. He says the squad was as fresh heading into that campaign as they were for previous seasons.
One thing on our side, and I suppose at this stage I'm probably, it doesn't apply to me that much, but the age profile was still quite young. You could see in the team as well, I think, you know, we used to go for a trip in the middle of winter or, you know, Christmas time or that after Christmas, and it had a great effect of kind of galvanising the squad again. You know, I think there was a hunger built up again for the following year. Now, we had to play league matches that time before Christmas, but they weren't too important really. You know, you got a pretty good break, like just after Christmas for couple of weeks, and then the appetite would start again.
1981 saw a third member of the Spillane clan join the Kerry squad as Tom linked up with elder siblings Pat and Mick. Tom says their presence made for a smooth step up.
Made it a lot easier because you know you know from them what sacrifices they have to make and what efforts that they have to put into training and the level of training and the professional that's associated with training with Kerry, and it was huge help to come in and to have that, I suppose, and to have that guidance in front of you.
Jimmy Deanahan had the honour of leading Kerry's quest for four in a row. Deanahan decided to come up with an additional incentive in order to keep his teammates focused.
1981, being captain, obviously was special. Captaining a Kerry team is very, very precious. It's not everyone that gets that opportunity, especially when you're from a small junior club like Finug. I, at the time, was old enough to realise that there was a huge responsibility on my shoulders. I realised that I had that responsibility. And that particular year, I remember, we met here in Ballybunion, actually, and we were deciding maybe to give the team an incentive, what we should do, and somebody, if you were suggesting going to the Canaries, and I remember coming up with the idea of going to Australia, and I know that Mikko as well, because they had been there before. I'd probably mentioned it to him previous to that, but he was very excited about the prospect too of going to Australia. So we decided there and then that we'd go to Australia, and we set up a committee. It was a great incentive for the team actually to win the four in a row and then to go to Australia. There'd be no point in going to Australia. We weren't the All-Ireland champions. So that gave us a great incentive actually that particular year. Also, it led to the excitement during the summer of preparing for the Australian visit. I remember we were selling portraits of the Kerry team, and we had to do that ourselves, and we had to sell so many each. Also, there were other activities involved in it as well. But overall, it was all part of the excitement. And at the time, I was teaching, so I was off, obviously, the 1st of June. So I was doing absolutely nothing else, only just training for the team and doing whatever bit of organisation that I was involved in for the Australian trip, which was mostly done by the county board at that particular time. While I was there, actually, we played Australian rules players in probably the first type of compromise games. And I remember coming back and being interviewed and saying that I felt that there was room for a game between both countries. I broke my leg that summer, and Paddy Buggy set up a committee to look at setting up compromise rules, and he appointed me on it. So I actually, with John Maloney, drew up the first compromise rules.
Kerry did surrender their hold on the Sam Maguire in 1981, but only when the trophy was on a pre-championship jaunt to the USA. The 1980 Kerry County Championship winning Feel Rangers panel went to the States in early 1981. The unexplained disappearance of the cup prevented Feel Rangers squad member and Kerry player, the aforementioned Jimmy Deanahan, from returning home with the others.
Deanahan revealed that the cup was to have been given back in Gaelic Park at noon on Sunday, but it was not there when he went along. He had to wait a further 24 hours before retrieving it in the Gaelic Park premises. The story of the missing trophy turned out to be so serious that Feel Rangers officials brought in the FBI.
The Kerry man also detailed how Uproscommon, Brook Inn, Bronx NY and IRA were all scratched on the Sam Maguire. Kerry opened against Clare. Man of the match from the 1980 All-Ireland final, Tim Kennelly, was out with a hamstring injury and would also miss any Munster final. Sean Walsh was due to start, but injury also put pay to him. Thomas Balan came in for his debut, having played a club match the previous evening.
We played county league game against John Mitchell's in Aston-Stack Park on the Saturday evening. And on the Sunday, I was down for a sub in Listowel anyway, and against Clare. And when we arrived up to Listowel, I think we were staying this, we had our lunch in the Listowel Arms, and he says, "You're on midfield instead of Shawnee Walsh, who was injured at the time." Went on, I'm, you know, quite pleased the way I started. Shawnee came back for the Kerry Cork game then, but was delighted to get my debut so early, you know. And I think I did reasonably well on the day. I think I scored 1 or 2 points. So.
Owen Liston returned with a vengeance after missing the previous year's final. Bomber was responsible for 3 goals and 3 points as Kerry won 4-17 to 6 points. Clare led 2-1 early on, Liston opening Kerry's account after 2 minutes. Liston set up Pat Spillane for the equaliser after a quarter of an hour. Then Tom Spillane marked his debut with the leading point for the Kingdom. The opening Kerry goal came in the 18th minute. Owen Liston sent to the net, taking advantage after a ball from John Egan was misjudged by the Clare defence. Kerry were now ahead 1-3 to 2 points, and 6 unanswered points followed by half-time. 4 minutes into the second half, Clare hit the Kerry crossbar through Tom Killeen. 3 minutes after that, Bomber got his and Kerry's second goal. The Kingdom went into a 2-14 to 4 points lead. 3 penalties followed. Clare's Pat McNamara had his spot kick saved by Charlie Nelligan. Mikey Sheehy then sent his penalty over the bar, following a foul on Ogie Moran. Clare's George Fitzpatrick followed Sheehy's lead. Bomber's hat-trick arrived 6 minutes from time. The score now was 3-16 to 6 points. John Egan got goal number 4 in the final minute, and Kerry had won 4-17 to 6 points. Cork beat Waterford 2-18 to 7 points. To add to the pressure of the 4-in-a-row All-Ireland bid, fellow championship contenders Dublin, Galway and Roscommon had all fallen by the wayside. Kerry were going for their 7th Munster crown in a row when they met Cork. There was more drama the week leading into the match than that game itself. Ahead of the final, Mikey Sheehy escaped unhurt from a car crash in Limerick, the car somersaulting and landing on its roof. A write-off. Mikey Sheehy knows well he and his companion Paddy Whacker Moriarty had a lucky escape.
I was going up to Newcastle West, would you believe it, to collect something. And I'd said it was a Tuesday morning before the Munster final. And going down Barna Gap, and myself and Whacker having a chat. This was we were discussing tactics, and Whacker was always great to go for a few kicks and, you know, to look after us and what have you. And the road was a bit damp, and I pressed the brake, and the car took off, and car somersaulted, and car was right off. And we were just very, very lucky and to get out alive, I can tell you that now, you know. And no marks, walked out of the car. Actually, when training that night in Killarney, you know, I wouldn't say I was in shock, but, you were thinking about it for a while, all right, you know. But thankfully, the game worked out fine the following Sunday. We beat Cork.
Sheehy was not the only one to have a narrow escape. Intended match referee Pat Lane of Limerick could not officiate due to injury, as he himself was involved in a car crash. Kerry recalled Sean Walsh for the Munster final, with Tom Spillane making way. Spillane was not too put out about being dropped.
If you asked me to bring the bottles after this, I would have. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter with that bunch of fellas. It was a privilege to be playing with them, and just to be there. Didn't expect to be on the team, and as I said, I'd have brought the kit back.
Tommy Doyle was at midfield alongside Jack O'Shea. Sean Walsh was at centre-back. Cork mustered just 3 points in the Munster final, losing by 11. After winning the toss, Kerry opted to play against the wind. That turned out to be a wise decision, as Kerry held Cork to a single point in the opening period. A Mikey Sheehy free in the 13th minute had Kerry in front. Pat Spillane doubled the advantage after 19 minutes. The 21st minute saw Cork's one and only point of the first period, courtesy of Tom Creedon. Both sides then had goal chances. Kerry's Charlie Nelligan denied Tom Creedon, while at the other end, Tommy Doyle was foiled by Billy Morgan. Cork, with the wind behind them, registered 7 wides in the first half. At the short whistle, they trailed 2-1. The match referee had whistled Kerry up for illegal hand passing on numerous occasions. The kingdom had not yet got used to the new rule, which stated, in the case of the open hand pass, there shall be a visible striking of the ball by the hand, and where the striking action is not visible, the referee shall deem the pass as being a foul. Goals could no longer be scored by the ball being passed to the net by hand or fist. The wind had risen come the start of the second period. Kerry were quickly into their stride, and within 5 minutes, Mikey Sheehy and John Egan had put over. It was now Kerry 4 points to Cork's one. An unfortunate 10th-minute collision between Owen Liston and Cork keeper Billy Morgan led to Billy Morgan being stretchered off. 13 minutes into the half, Liston punched over to make the game 5 points to one in Kerry's favour. Cork doubled their match total 20 minutes into the second half, thanks to a Dave Barry point. Back-to-back Mikey Sheehy points increased the gap to Kerry 7, Cork 2. The only goal of the game came 10 minutes from the end.
Mikey Sheehy was put through with a fine ball from the ever-industrious John Egan. The Austin Stacks man made ground to the right of the Cork goal and then unleashed a rasping shot, and the ball sped from his boot and bulged the side of the Cork net.
John Egan, who had unbelievable vision, a bit like the Bomber. Bomber broke the ball down to him and I took off, and it was like, really, I couldn't miss it. He put it into my chest, you know, me in running, that he just absolutely put into my mouth, you know, that you couldn't, you know, absolutely didn't even have to break stride. You know, that would have been a goal that I would have remembered clearly because of his pass and his vision.
That score made it 1-7 to 2 points in Kerry's favour. Pat Spillane and Mikey Sheehy took it to 1-9 to 2 points. 6 minutes from the end, Denny Allen scored Cork's third point. Points by Pat Spillane and Jack O'Shea completed Kerry's and the game's scoring. It ended Kerry 1-11, Cork 3 points. The final was best summed up in the following day's Irish Times, who proclaimed that there have been many more cheerful funerals. It was an unchanged Kerry side which took to the field for the All-Ireland semi-final against Mayo. A second-minute point from Adrian Garvey had Mayo ahead. Mikey Sheehy equalised from a free. Joe McGrath put Mayo in front again in the 7th minute. Pat Spillane had Kerry back in terms a minute later. Points in the 11th and 12th minutes from Ogie Moran and Mikey Sheehy had Kerry 2 ahead. A goal 60 seconds later put 5 between the sides.
Ogie Moran getting the ball from Owen Liston inside to Pat Spillane. Pat Spillane takes a quick solo, plays it inside to Ger Power. Ger Power is going through like a train. Goal from Ger Power.
An absolutely cracking goal by Ger Power. It was all made behind by Pat Spillane. Pat Spillane got the ball. He turned around. He saw Ger Power running inside him. And with a lovely little hand flick, got the ball inside to Power. He careered through like a runaway train. And he gave the Mayo goalkeeper no chance whatsoever with a daisy cutter low into the corner of the net at the hip 16. In. Great goal by Kerry.
What a team they are, going for 4 All-Irelands in a row.
1-4 became 1-5 almost immediately when Owen Liston pointed.
Owen Liston getting the ball again, and Owen Liston with another easy point, and Mayo are rattled here in the early stages.
Yeah, Owen Liston, the man with all the skills, he can kick him with his left, his right, he can kick, he can punch him or anything at all, and he got that ball, turned around with the left leg, put the ball straight and threw over the bar. Lovely point.
Kerry's Pat Spillane then put over, to which Jimmy Burke replied. Mayo down by 1-6 to 3 points, cut the kingdom's lead in half.
Billy Joe Padden drives it inside. Jimmy Burke. McHale has gone inside. Must be it is. It's a goal for Mayo. Eugene McHale.
Yes, indeed. Eugene McHale got right through the Kerry defence. They were very, very suspect there. He got right through the defence and he was right up on top of Charlie Nelligan nearly, and he just blasted the ball into the back of the net. He rounded Jimmy Deanahan and with the right leg he blasted the ball low into the back of the net at the canal end. A great goal for Mayo.
Kerry were afforded some much needed breathing space in the 33rd minute.
Mayo onside again for Jimmy Burke, but Paddy Lynch reads the situation very well. The Beaufort man comes out rather comfortably, plays it outside now to Mick Spillane. And away goes the left half-back, Mick Spillane. John Egan might be able to judge this one. He is. John Egan has it. John Egan to his right is Owen Liston, and a goal for the kingdom.
That was an absolutely marvellous goal by Kerry. The hole into the field. There were 6 players involved in that, and no Mayo man touched the ball. When this Kerry team start moving, they are literally unstoppable. John Egan could have shot himself. He turned around, he hand-passed the ball to the Bomber, and the bearded Liston from Beale banged the ball low into the back of the net. A superb goal.
A Mayo point in the 35th minute proved to be not only their last of the half, but the entire match. Kerry led 2-7 to 1-6 at half-time. Mayo were kept scoreless in the second half, while Kerry tagged on 12 points.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Kerry's final opponents were to be the side they beat in the previous season's All-Ireland semi-final, Offaly. Offaly were 12 points to 6 winners over Down in the last 4. Injury ruled Pat Spillane out of the decider.
In the intermediate championship game against Waterford, Turton Shapley, that was it. No opponent on me. I went to the Flag Hill in Kilgavin that night and danced the Siege of Innes, which didn't help, but I'll never forget the pain the following morning. I couldn't walk for a week out of it, so it was just savage. They left it up to me to whether I was fit to play or not in 81. I always knew in the back of my head that my knee wasn't right, you know, and that it was bandaged and whatever like that, but I just knew that, you know yourself, that something wasn't quite right. And I remember playing, doing a fitness test in Blanchardstown on the Saturday evening, being brought out with Dr. Dave Gainey and Mick out to St. Bridges Club in Blanchardstown and doing a fitness test with Mick. And I passed it, you know, and their boys thought I was great. And I kind of knew in my heart and soul that I wasn't, you know. And even though we didn't say it that night, but I knew the following morning, didn't I? I said, no, I'm not fit. So, and I, you know, you like, the thing about it is there's no point in going playing. Like, too many fellas with injuries for selfish reasons declare themselves fit, you know, when you know they're not fully fit. And like, there's no point in saying afterwards, well, you know, I played badly because I was injured. So like, I ruled myself out of it. And like, one of the greatest memories I will have, nicest moments I will have out of sport is being brought on with a couple of minutes to go of a game that, well, the only thing I can remember about that game was a fantastic goal from Jack O'Shea. But Kerry always looked like winning. But I mean, two memories of the game: one, being asked to stand in the team photograph beforehand, even though I wasn't part of the 15, and secondly, being brought on with 2 or 3 minutes to go just to say that I'd played some role in the forward row. Like, I'd be very grateful to Mick and the selectors for doing that. The team talk the night before was revolving that I was fit and I was going to play and I'd passed the test, but I always knew deep inside that I wasn't going to be playing. Mick, in fairness, would be fair. Mick always left it to the players. And I mean, the one thing about that bunch of Kerry players, I mean, they were mature, solid guys. They weren't guys who put self-interest before that of the team, you know.
Mikey Sheehy was in danger of joining Spillane on the sideline.
I got injured in the county championship playing with the Stacks against Shannon Rangers, and I had a very, as it turned out to be, a serious instep injury. I couldn't train, I couldn't tug out, you know. I was doing a little bit of work on a static bike, but I never tugged out. I think from the, we'll say, the other, or the county championship game was on the week after the All-Ireland semi-final, I never tugged out, I'd say once or twice possibly, until the All-Ireland final. And I didn't think I was going to make it. And in fairness to Mick, he said no, he'd always give you every chance of playing in a final, and you know, he'd trust you, to be honest with him anyway, so he always said. But maybe it was the fact that I was the free taker. I kind of said to midweek, I said, Mick, I don't think I'd better play at all, you know, because I had ferocious pain. Like, and every time I ran, I was in pain. So he sent me up to Con Murphy on the Friday before the game to get it checked out. Well, sorry, not to get it checked out, to get a painkilling injection to see would it work. So I went down to the bar, like, with Con, so he gave me a jab in it, and it was the same nose. You're going for a filling in your tooth. My leg was just from the ankle down. There was no feeling in it. It was funny. So I went kicking. I couldn't. I said, this isn't going to work at all, because you didn't. I kicked a few along the ground and finished it. Then I got into the range. So I said it to Mikko. In fairness to him, no. He said, no. He said, we'll start you. And I got a painkilling injection before the game. And I think the first three, from what I can remember that day, I don't think I got it airborne at all. But I got a couple of points, would you believe, from play, believe it or not. And you know, I was limping. I've seen that bit, clips of that All Ireland since, and you could see that I was limping clearly. And I didn't play football for about 6 months, I'd say, after it. They didn't discover the seriousness of the injury until the following March. I had to go to Cork for a scan because it wasn't improving. I could do nothing with it, and it was one of these famous metatarsals, no name like that, fancy name like that, for in those days, and there was a chip in it, so they put me in plaster for about 6 weeks, and that actually cured me eventually, you know.
Tim Kennelly was finally able to return from injury for his first appearance of the season. Kennelly came in at centre back, Sean Walsh moved to midfield, and Tommy Doyle went to half forward. As mentioned already, 1981 saw a new hand pass rule introduced, one which Kerry were struggling with. Ahead of the All-Ireland final, Mick O'Dwyer called on the match referee to visit the Kerry training camp.
Paddy Collins is right, from Westmead. He was refereeing, I think, was it an All-Ireland final? And we asked him to come down to explain the hand pass and the pick Cup and all that type to us, which I think was a great move from our point of view. He came down and he explained exactly how the hand pass should be done properly. And would you believe it, we went and whistled for one bad hand pass in that All-Ireland final.
Kerry forward John Egan has a theory on just why the hand pass rule was changed.
They were trying to change the rules to slow Kerry down that time. And McCullough Wire brought the top referee at the time, the Westmead men, Collins, brought him down into training to show us what was accepted and what wasn't in relation to the hand pass. Now, having played football all my life, and heading into 30 years of age, and the referee coming down to show us how to pass the ball was quite extraordinary. I just could not believe it. And he was on about the modified version of the hand pass.
The final was played on a wet and windy afternoon, which contributed to a poor affair. Two scores from Matt Connor, after 3 and 5 minutes at Offaly ahead. Between the 10th and 13th minutes, Kerry had 3 points of their own to forge ahead, then added to their advantage.
Now Owen Liston out here in the middle of the field, and Kerry still yet to score in this 81 final. 2 points to nil, Offaly lead. Pawny O'Shea driving inside now to Ger Power. Ger Power giving it to Tommy Doyle. Liam Curran's putting the challenge in, sent Tommy Doyle. Here's Ogie Moran. Ogie kicks it high, and Ogie kicks it over the bar for the first score in the final.
Yeah, lovely point by Kerry there. Bentley wanted that, and Tommy Doyle, the West Kerry man, he was deeply involved, and he gave the ball to Ogie Moran, and the Bain men just outside the 45 metre line popped the ball over the bar. Lovely point by them. Beautiful day for football, sun beaming down here in Croke Park, and Offaly are looking good.
And Ogie Moran back in the 40 yards once again here now, and it's going to be a kick out from Martin Furlong. He drives it left-footed out towards the middle of the field. Players go high there. The bomber is trying to get the ball in there. So too is Jack O'Shea. And Shawnee Walsh is fouled there. And it's Mick Spillane who's going to take this free for Kerry. Mick drives it in high. It's flicked on nicely. Owen Liston with the kick. Oh, poor one in the end. Martin Furlong had no trouble with that one, Weezy. That was a poor kick.
No, that was a poor kick. There's no doubt at all about it. And the high ball came in for Spillane, and it was Bomber that got the ball, turned around with a very bad effort. And Martin Furlong, the great Offaly goalkeeper, no problem at all with it.
It's back to Ger Power. Ger Power in again, out up. Pawny O'Shea from defence, and Pawny O'Shea from in front of goal makes it 2 points apiece.
Yeah, and that's a very unusual score, because Pawny O'Shea is well renowned for his defensive abilities. Seldom you see that man from his career prone scoring. Pawny O'Shea was at the end of that lovely passing move, kicking into the canal goal in Croke Park, bang the ball over the bar. The scores are level, 2 points each.
Now Padraig Dunn's kick is blocked down. He's the youngest man in the field.
Ogie Moran, I say, was fouled there, Gary.
He was indeed, and he's getting the booze.
Kenny Collins, the referee, I think, you know, the Offaly supporters don't like what he's doing. Even though he's a Leinster man, he's not far from Offaly. He's a Westmeath man, the referee.
And Mick Spillane is to take this free for Kerry. High inside again. Was there another push? There was indeed another push. A foul there on right. Conroy and Mikey Sheehy-Weeshy. This will be a tip over free.
Yeah, Paddy Collins very strict today, and this will be needed. The high ball came in from Mick Spillane. Mikey Sheehy got it over, he said he was got a little pull, and he'd pop this over the bar there, I've no doubt.
Mikey Sheehy over the bar, and Kerry lead for the first time in this All-Ireland final by 3 points to two. Now it's a 45. Owen Liston winning the 45 there for Kerry. He's having a great battle inside there, full forward and full back, and it's got to be a 45 to be taken here, I think, by Mikey Sheehy, who's making his way out. In fact, it's Jack O'Shea who's going to take this one. It's Jacko who's taking it. Jacko, not great projection with it, dropping inside to John Egan. John slipped as he kicked it with the left leg. And Mikey Sheehy, oh, that's a lovely fisted effort from absolutely nothing from Mikey Sheehy.
Oh, that was an absolutely beautiful. That's a very difficult thing to do, Gary. It's very seldom you see it now. The ball came in from John Egan, from the 55-yard free by Jack O'Shea, and the ball was flashing over Mikey Sheehy's head, but he just put up his right fist, and he connected absolutely beautiful, and all in one lovely flowing movement. He literally flicked the ball over the bar. Lovely point, classy point.
Well, Liam Connor inside here now, full back. He, of course, is brother of Tomás at the middle of the field. He's having a great old battle with Owen Liston. Kerry still lead now by 2 points here, 4 points to two. Martin Furlong's with a kick out to the middle of the field. Padraig Dunn gathers it for Offaly, drives it high into the Kerry full back line. And back there is Mick Spillane. He flicks it nicely to Pawny Lynch. Pawny Lynch. touch out to the middle of the field, but it's gone astray, and Liam Connor picks it up again. Liam Connor inside, right into the hands of John O'Keefe. He gives it to Tim Kennelly, and Tim Kennelly drop kicks it out into the middle of the field, but there's the Kerry man waiting for it, and it's Owen Liston who was beaten to it there by Liam Corns. Back again come Kerry. Joe O'Keefe, Tim Kennelly, a drop kick again out to his left, and making the run here near the sideline, and it's going to be a line ball to Offaly.
Yeah, and Tim Kennelly has been well known for his drop kicks. Alright, Gary, they are great when they go straight, but you don't have that much control over them, and he took a drop kick there and went out over the line, the far side of the field, the Cusick stand.
Line ball for Offaly taken quickly, and all in his own was Jack O'Shea. Jack O'Shea to Owen Liston now. Kerry opening it up. Owen Liston with a good ball inside here. Might be something from this. Jar Power in space, taking on Liam Corran's. Jar Power with the left footed effort, and that's another point for Kerry.
Yeah, lovely point by the Austin Sachs man. It came from Jar Power just outside the box there. Turned around, got inside his man, Gary. Was going to kick with the right leg, came back in his left leg, and he just flashed the ball over the bar. It's 5 points to two. Kerry leading Offaly.
With Kerry scoreless for the remaining 13 minutes of the half, Offaly were level by the break. Sean and Brendan Lowry reduced the gap to the minimum. Tomás Connor grabbed the equaliser, but not before Kerry passed up a goal chance.
Now 3 minutes left in the first half as Charlie Nelligan kicks the ball out. Kerry lead only by one here now. Joe O'Keefe getting the break. Pulls it on way over there. And Pat Fitzgerald cuts it out for Offaly. There's it back. Mick Lowry back to Pat Fitzgerald, but a poor clearance by him, and is picked up by Sean Walsh. Sean Walsh with a good ball inside for Owen Liston. Oh, what a block by Martin Furlong.
Oh, brilliant save by Furlong from Owen Liston. High ball came in, Liston got right beside his man, and they hit over to beat, but the goalkeeper, he was right up on top of Furlong. What a brave goalkeeper he is. And Owen Liston just failed there. Brilliant save, Gary. Great goalkeeper Furlong.
And in the meantime, it's been kicked over by Tomás Connor. Great kick by the midfielder, and we're level at 5 points apiece. Loose marking by Kerry. Great score by Offaly.
Yeah, it was a great run up the field after that. Great save by Furlong. Back up the field to O'Connor, and he with the right leg popped the ball over the bar. They're level again, 5 points each.
The game was tied at 5 points apiece at half time.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
There was an eventful start to the second period.
So, Pat Fitzgerald drives it in. Heavy challenge going in from Mick Spillane. Into Sean Lowry. Pat Fitzgerald picks it up again. Just in the early stage of the second half. Sides are level. Project done. Plays it high. And it's just gone to the left and wide. We still await the first score of the second half, we see.
Yeah, but after they've been disappointed with that, Gary, because they had a good opportunity for Pine kicking into the canal goal. And Jerry Carlock had the ball there and pulled it very, very badly wide. That was a bad miss by them. Awfully having a lot of the play.
Having plenty of the play, definitely. And Charlie Nelligan drives it out again. We await the first score of the second half. Charlie, high goes a couple of Offaly players over the far side, climbing in the backs of the Kerry players. And Aidan O'Halloran picks it up there in the half-back line. Brendan Lowry going down for the ball. Pushed there, says the referee. Lowry gets out of it quickly. Here's Jerry Carroll. He has the speed on Tim Kennelly. Still Jerry Carroll. Fantastic run by the 49 yardsman. He falls, he gets up, he gets back, and he kicks it off the crossbar. Relief for Charlie Nelligan in the Kerry defence.
Oh, right off for Kerry there. An absolutely brilliant run by Jerry Carroll. He left Tim Kennelly behind him. He got right through and he hit a rocket of a shot. He knew what to beat on the goal. He left leg, came off the crossbar. The ball was cleared out to the field there. That was a lucky let off. An absolute bullet of a shot.
The Kerry goal remained intact, spurring the side into action.
It's a line ball right in front of the Hogan stand here. Mick Spillane shouting out instructions to Tommy Doyle. Mick wearing the number 7 this afternoon. Takes this line ball. Driving inside for John Egan. It's picked up again by Richie Connor. Richie Connor doing well coming out of defence. This is a good run by him, and Richie Connor, more danger for the Kerry defence. It's grabbed there, very, very near the sideline. And the referee says play on, but Paddy Collins, which is calling the ball up here, is going to be free into Kerry.
Yes, indeed, but I can tell you Offaly played very well, Gary. It was that let off by Jerry Carroll. If that goal had gone in against Kerry, they're going for 4 in a row. Not easy to achieve it, but Carroll's shot, if that had gone in, Kerry would be in dire trouble. But they're beginning to lift the siege now. They're beginning to turn the game around a little bit.
Jack O'Shea takes the free for Kerry. Inside there, it's gathered by John Egan. He slips. Ogie Moran, outside. outside here is very high from Shawnee Welsh, and Shawnee Welsh gets the first score in the second half for the Kingdom.
Yeah, and a nice point there by the Kilns O'Rahilly's men, and once again Ogie Moran was involved in it. John Egan came out, got the ball, gave to Ogie Moran, Ogie Moran out to Sean Welsh. The Kilns O'Rahilly's men from under his 16 turn around, and he just popped the ball over the bar with the right leg. Lovely point by Welsh.
So Kerry leading 6-5. Mikey Sheehy pulled on there by John Egan. It's gone very near the sideline, and in fact it's gone out over the line, way over into the far side. Weeshie, it's hard to call it so far.
Yeah, very difficult to call, Gary, because I can tell you that Eugene McGee has this Offaly team very, very well prepared. They're pushing Kerry to the absolute limit.
Old Liston wins it, plays it back outside again to John Egan. John from near the sideline, not too far inside the line. That's a cracking kick from the man from Sneem. Great score from John Egan.
Oh, lovely score from John Egan, kicking into the railway goal here in Croke Park. The ball finished up with Egan. He was well outside the 45-yard line, and he turned around with the right leg. He floated the ball absolutely beautiful over the bar. It's 7-5, Kerry leading Offaly.
And the kick out coming now once again from Martin Furlong. The familiar left kick out towards the middle of the field again. And high goes Shawnee Welsh. Brilliant, brilliant catch by the Rahadies man, and he's fouled.
Gary, that's absolutely magnificent feeling. I saw Mick O'Connell here up then very often in Croke Park, but I can tell you that bit of feeling by Shawnee Welsh was reminiscing of anything Mick O'Connell ever did here. Wonderful feeling by the Rahadies man.
Paulie O'Shea is going to take this free as Shawnee Welsh was fouled in the middle of the field. And Paulie O'Shea drives it long inside again. High there goes the chance. Oh! Great hook, or was it a block by Martin Furlong? I think inside it all came from the 45 there, Weezy.
Yes, indeed, yeah, it went right into the square. One of the Kerry forwards got it inside there, and I think it was Mickey Sheehy, and he just shot for the goal. When he was just shooting, one of the Offaly backs came across, and he hit him an absolute welt of his shoulder, and the ball was cleared out for a 45.
Yeah, Mikey Sheehy is going to take this 45. Kerry, no goals yet in the game. And Mikey Sheehy's going to take this 45. The socks are well up around the knees, and here comes Mikey taking about three runs up to it, and it's blocked in actual fact, and Padraig Dunn, and the referee has penalised Padraig Dunn. Weezy's bringing the ball up further.
Yeah, because Padraig Dunn was only a couple of yards away from Mikey Sheehy. He can't do that. That's the foul. Paddy Collins, the Westmeath referee, right up alongside it. It should be a point.
It should be a point for Mikey, and he makes no mistake, lands it on top of the net, and that's more breathing space now for the Kingdom.
Yes, indeed, it's 8-5 there. Another point by Mickey Sheehy. An absolutely beautiful, wonderful free kicker. Any time, Gary, that he's anywhere near the goal, you can close your eyes, you can bend down, and you can pick up the white flag.
Mikey Sheehy keeping Kerry well in it now, going for four in a row. Historic occasion it will be if they can achieve it. Martin Furlong, again, out towards the middle of the field. Will Welsh go high again? This time it's gathered out there by Jack O'Shea, his midfield partner. Kerry are winning midfield, Weezy.
Yeah, indeed, Jack O'Shea and Sean Welsh are definitely coming into Welsh's this unusual style of leaping. He's a fierce spring off the ground. And Jack O'Shea there, what a great service he's given to the county, great fielding.
Paddy O'Shea is taking this free for Kerry again. High ball, Owen Liston goes high for it inside there. It's broken outside, and it's a Ger Power who has it near the sideline. Ger hand passes it inside to Paddy O'Shea, loses the ball, toe pokes it across to his left to Jacko. Jacko hits it high, dangerous one inside again, watched inside by the Bomber. The Bomber's pulled to the ground. Can he fist it in? Is it a penalty? There's a fierce scramble inside. That's a free out, Weezy.
Not Gary, I don't know all about that, from where I'm sitting here it looked to me that the Bomber was dragged and pulled to the ground. He was right up inside and nearly alongside Martin Furlong, would you believe. Got the high ball, there was three or four defenders around him, they pulled him and dragged him and pulled him. He went down to the ground. It isn't easy, put him down. The referee came in, free out.
Going into the 20th minute of the second half, Kerry led 8-5. Ogie Moran put four between the sides.
Well, the gap is filled once again by Tim Kennelly here, and Tim Kennelly out to his left cornerback Paulie Lynch. The Kerry defence, we should playing outstanding stuff here this afternoon.
They're outstanding, well, but you know, the Kerry are getting a few soft enough frees, Gary. I thought that free there on Paulie Lynch, now the Beaufort men were soft enough really, and Paddy Collins slipped him a few nice handy frees, which is helping them lift the siege.
Mick Spillane to take this free for Kerry. drives it high. The bomber broken down. Ogie Moran nips in. Ogie Moran from all of 50 yards out has got an absolutely brilliant point for Kerry.
Oh, a lovely point by Ogie Moran kicking into the railway goal here. The bomber came out, broke the ball down. The two North Kerrymen, the two Balemen, and Bamoti's right leg from 45 yards out. He's literally put the ball high into the sky and it dropped on top of the net. It's 9 points to five. The Kingdom lead by 4 points.
Offaly were forced to wait until 25 minutes into the half for their first score of the period. Sean Lowry's point making it 9 points to six. Sandwiched between points by Mikey Sheehy and Tommy Doyle was an Owen Liston effort on goal which would have finally killed Offaly off.
9 minutes left here now. Martin Furlong drives it out. We still don't have a goal in the All-Ireland final. Ogie Moran nips in again, sells the dummy. Referee saying play on. The Offaly supporters saying that he fouled the ball, but I don't think he did. And Liam Connors getting the ball there just ahead of Owen Liston, broken by Jacko. Here's Ogie Moran. Oh, he's on his own inside, and a kamikaze tackled by Martin Furlong. There we see on the Kerry full forward. Was it a fair Owen Liston?
Yes, indeed. The bomber was shot down there by the Offaly goalkeeper, Martin Furlong. The ball came in. It looked like bomber gets put into the net. The goalkeeper came out, Furlong. He's brave, he's dangerous, and he attacks the ball. He puts his body in where no one else will. Brought down the bomber, cleared the ball. Great clearance by the goalkeeper.
The score was 12 points to 7, entering the 33rd minute.
Now, Liam Currens wins the ball. Liam Currens drives it inside, and Jimmy Deanhin comes across the goal and cuts it out nicely over to his right to Tim Kennelly. Tim Kennelly getting away from Jerry Carroll, plays it out to the middle of the field. Tommy Doyle goes high and gathers the ball for Kerry. Well won by Tommy Doyle. Out to his left to John Egan. John Egan coming near the sideline. Hand pass it aside to Owen Liston. Owen Liston back to Egan. Going up along the sideline. Still John Egan on solo number three. Across now to Mikey Sheehy. Mikey Sheehy in over the head to Jack O'Shea. Jack O'Shea with the kick. What a goal! From one side of the field to the other, and Jack O'Shea has buried it.
What an absolutely superb goal by Kerry. One of the greatest goals we've ever seen in Croke Park. That's what I'd say about it. And it was finished by Jack O'Shea, the midfielder. An absolutely rocket of a shot, kicking into the railway goal here in Croke Park. And it all started away behind by Jimmy Deanhin. Jimmy Deanhin got the ball. He left it out to Tim Kennelly. Tim Kennelly kicked it out to Tommy Doyle. He fielded magnificently in the middle of the field. Then it went to John Egan, back to the bomber. Bomber to Egan. Egan to Mickey Sheehy. Mickey Sheehy to Jack O'Shea. And the St. Mary's man hit a rocket of a shot across the face of the goal. And when you beat Martin Furlong with a shot like that, it must be good. Gary, one of the best goals I have ever seen as long as I'm coming to Croke Park. What a goal. Won 12 to 12 points.
And it looks at the 4-0 is achieved, and Pat Spillane is just into the game. Failed a fitness test this afternoon at 2 o'clock, but he's in Weeshy for the last few seconds.
Yes, indeed. Great to see him coming in. He's on the ball at the moment now, Gary, but what a goal. What an absolutely wonderful piece of movement. That's one of the great goals. One of the great goals by one of the great teams. 4-0 is on.
Jacko remembers having to work his own way up from one end of the pitch to the other.
Came from cornerback, and actually I was quite close to the cornerback when the ball was actually back there at the time, and I remember the ball sweeping out from Deanhin to Kennelly to Ogie, I think on to Egan, up to Bomber, back to Egan again, I think, and across to Mike Egan. I just kept going up along the Cusick stand side, and I knew eventually the ball would come across at some stage, you know. And these are probably golden moments you dream about in an All-Ireland final, I suppose, being able to do that and achieving that day would probably weren't the highlights for me.
The goal put the seal on a 1-12 to 8 points win, and Kerry had once more secured the 4 in a row. It was a victory which saw John O'Keefe emulate his namesake Dano. The pair were at the time the only two men to have won 7 All-Irelands. The jersey which Kerry wore for the victory over Offaly that day was yellow on top to a little under the armpit, then the remainder green underneath. John Barry, in his Kerryman newspaper report, declared,
"About those new style jerseys, it took a while to become accustomed to them, and the numbers on the back could have been a little easier to read, but who's complaining?"
The numbering on the Kerry jerseys is to this day a topic of discussion. Kerry captain Jimmy Deanahan's memories of the 1981 homecoming remain special to him.
Bringing back the cup, especially bringing back the cup to Finnoo Cross, I suppose, was, you know, a particular, give me particular satisfaction, bringing it back to your own place where you kicked the ball, a rubber ball, around as a youngster. And just to mention that, the three Lowry brothers, they came to Finnoog on the Tuesday night, which was very good for them because I was marking one of them, Brendan Lowry, whose son now is the great golfer.
Achieving the 4 in a row meant Kerry emulated the county side of 1929 to 1932, as well as the only other side to do so, Wexford, from 1915 to 1918. Journalist Donal Keenan feels this achievement, aligned to the victory of 75, sets this side apart as being the greatest.
That's a question I always find very hard to answer, because the team that won the three in a row in the 80s was a spectacularly good team as well. I suppose if you're looking at sheer football ability, natural football ability, and then the power, the strength of people like Kennelly and Deenan, you know, the flair of Spillane, the flair of Gerard Power, there was just so much. And then the arrival of the Bomber was a massive, to me, was probably the final crucial link in making that team, the four in a row team, what it was. Bomber wasn't just a big target man. Bomber was had a footballing brain equalled by nobody. If you look at some of the goals he scored, people might remember he scored hand pass scores. Some of the goals he scored with his feet were tremendous goals. And the dexterity he showed for a big man is similar to the dexterity somebody like Jimmy Keaveney showed, even though he was a big man and was probably never fully match fit. But over 10 yards and swivelling, the way they swivelled, the balance they had, and I think that's what Bomber brought, not just as a target man, but as a pure footballing expert.
Kerry great Mert Kelly, who also served as a county selector, was among the watching crowd as Kerry won their four in a row. Mert's son Colm recalls his late father's thoughts on how the game had evolved since Mert's own playing days of the 1930s and 40s.
Yeah, I think, Kevin, when the hand-passing game came in the late 70s and early 80s, he didn't like it. You know, he always said fellas are throwing the ball around the place. They should be fisting the ball. They should be kicking the ball. And he felt it was almost like a basketball-like game. But I think when Kerry won the four in a row from 78-81, he seemed to forget it.
Eugene McGee was manager of the Offaly team in 1981. He would have his revenge 12 months later against a side which he felt was beginning to show the signs of wear and tear.
81 was significant because the scoring statistics suddenly began to change dramatically. This was the first time that no Kerry forward got scored a goal. Now that was, in my opinion, that was hugely symbolic. We played them about 7 or 8 times over the last previous 3 or 4 years, and it has usually 3 to 5 or 6 goals. And this time there was no goal except for Jacko's brilliant goal near the finish. And I suppose maybe there was the first signs of wear and tear on the Kerry team of the 70s at that point. Like looking back on it later on, you might see it that way. But we were beaten by, I think it was 7 points at the end finish. We were happy enough. Now, we really thought we were going to make a mighty game of that day, but our forwards were poor that day, and Tim Kennelly was man of the match and had a brilliant game that day and dominated the whole forward line. And, that was the turning point in that game. That decided that game, basically, above all else, you know. We were happy enough that we had curbed the brilliant Kerry forward line a bit that time, you know, 1-11 or whatever it was. You know, it was reasonable compared to what it had been before. So it's kind of a hidden final or a forgotten final. Nobody ever remembers 1981 final, very few apart from Jack O'Shea's goal. But for us, it was crucially important, because when we reassessed it a few weeks later, like, and met, we saw that we were closing the gap quite a lot more than most Kerry people had figured. Kerry just regarded that fourth match as purely a vehicle to get you into the opportunity to play for the fifth in a row.
Right.
It was, you know, it had no other purpose for Kerry except to clear the decks for the Grand Slam the following year, which is understandable, you know.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles, brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.